James, I'm happy to be talking to you here on the Awareness Connection, our new podcast series.
Yeah.
I think, as you know, I've been interested for a long time in the topic of awareness and how humans have the potentiality of developing awareness in new ways. This has been my professional interest. And just so people know, who are new to the podcast, I'm Ted Diamond. I'm the director of the Diamond Institute. And this is James French.
Hey, everybody.
James is a teaching assistant at the Diamond Institute. And we're going to be talking about this subject of awareness. And we thought, as a starting point, that we could begin with the sort of general theme that has driven me for years, which is how, as human beings, are we designed and why are we designed? In what ways are we designed to become more conscious and to develop our consciousness as a kind of unrecognized potentiality? That's what I've been interested in. I know you are too, James.
I'm a longtime reader of your books. I actually started reading your books before I started learning from you. You know, it's been 12 years, something like that, since I first bought one of your books. 13 years, maybe. Mm.
Yeah, been a while. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, here's a starting thought. When we think about becoming more aware as a kind of an attribute or a faculty or a potential, many of us think of meditation, and certainly that's an aspect of developing awareness. But there are really a number of different aspects of awareness that we could refer to that are possible besides what we normally think of when we meditate. For instance, sitting here and speaking with you, James, I can be aware of you as a part of my cognitive set of faculties. I could also be aware of part of myself, let's say kinesthetically or tactily. I could be aware of the contact of the chair, my back against the chair. And that is as much an aspect of awareness as what we would normally think of when we think of awareness as sort of an aspect of consciousness, or the kinesthetic awareness is an aspect of consciousness if you bring it into your conscious awareness. So awareness is really, we can describe it in a very broad way, not just limited to what we normally think of as a mental faculty. And when we speak about awareness that way, then we're really speaking about trying to understand the human design and how and in what ways awareness is possible as a kind of unrecognized educational possibility. And as you know, James, my view has for years has been that we have some quite sophisticated ideas about awareness, but I believe lack a full educational model of what it means to become more aware.
Yeah.
That's kind of the general theme here that we're going to discuss. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's something that that I definitely wanted to talk to you about today. You know, this title, you know, it's an educational model of awareness. And I was wondering if you'd like, you talk about what you mean by educational. I know that, you know, that this is a word that I hear you say often. And, you know, I mean, I know that you studied, you have a master's degree in education, and like, I don't know, it's like one of those words that I think that I know what you mean, but I really want to hear like how do you define it? You know, like, what are you really trying to say, you know?
Yeah. Well, one thing I think you could say about the educational aspect of this is that when I first learned about being aware, I knew that I was familiar with some Eastern philosophy, and I didn't doubt, and I still, and I even more have more even more conviction now, but I didn't doubt that there were that higher stages of awareness were possible. but I couldn't understand how to access them as a matter of, let's say, normal educational growth. On the other hand, I was aware of and became interested in and more down-to-earth kind of awareness practices. But to my mind, they were therapeutic and not educational, because when you practice, let's say, practice a relaxation technique or some, or focus your mind with the object, with the idea of quieting down, and then that's measurable or measured as, you know, as something that you get a benefit from, that to me is more therapeutic. It's not really telling me much about what the possibilities are, what the potential is. And that's part of what I mean by educational.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. It's helpful to hear you distinguish like therapeutic versus educational, almost like, you know, when someone tells you that you can use your awareness, you know, to relax, or use your awareness to, I don't know, you know, to quiet your mind or something like this. You know, it's almost like they take awareness as a given, and they sort of teach you a method or something. And educational seems a lot richer from that perspective, you know?
Yeah.
There's skills to learn.
Yeah.
Things to do, you know?
Yeah, and then here's another aspect that I think, you know, we're going to touch on in more depth, but is worth mentioning here, is that in looking for you know, the potential and trying to understand the potential in us as humans to become more aware, you're naturally going to go toward literature and subject matter about the human being and biology and evolution. But in a general way, evolutionary theory, or the theory of evolution, does not really allow for the possibility of higher levels of consciousness.
Yeah. I mean,
right? The attitude in evolutionary theory is, well, we have some remarkable capacities as humans, but they have developed under the pressure of natural selection to serve utilitarian purposes.
Yeah.
And the fact that we're able to make, let's say, make great art, or some, you know, certain people can make wonderful art, or have certain insights or think creatively, is just considered to be a kind of a byproduct of what was originally a utilitarian function.
Yeah.
Right? But I never believed that. I questioned that from day one. And it's not that I didn't think that evolutionary theory was accurate. I think the theory of natural selection is pretty clearly true. Mm. But it doesn't explain everything about human beings. And the one thing to me that clearly demonstrated that was the faculty of awareness, because, or whatever, even the little I understood at the time, because if you're able, I can understand that quieting the mind might be something that you can do just simply because you're able to learn how to quiet down the nervous system. But why is it that when you quiet the mind is able to operate with a greater level of insight or discernment? Mm. Once you begin speaking about states of awareness as something to be developed, you begin to step out of what evolutionary theory can explain. And yeah, then you've got to broaden your conception of the human being to include other functions and capacities that are as yet not recognized by science.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that you hear all the time in like the field of evolutionary psychology. Like every aspect of our mind is there because it had some sort of survivability utility, some survival utility. Like, you know, I can play an instrument, therefore I can, you know, attract females and reproduce more. Like, you know, like every aspect of our mind seems to be there because of it allowed someone in the past to survive and it got passed on. I mean, this is a view that's totally different than the view than what you're saying here.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, also growing up, like going to college and being interested in psychology, and philosophy and the mind in general, you didn't hear a lot of discussion in psychology courses about like not only didn't you hear discussion about higher levels of awareness, but it was sort of like, if you were taught about the development of the mind, for example, through the human lifetime, it sort of stopped at about, I don't know, age 20 or 25, maybe, when you reached your sort of like adult brain development.
Yeah.
And anything, you know, there's nothing past there because that's just what we have, what we're given. And you're saying something completely different here. You're like claiming and or recognizing the possibility for like higher levels of awareness than that, even.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I'd love to talk about that.
Well, let's talk about one really important piece of it, James, which is the mind and body in action. So this is something that we teach at the Diamond Institute. It's what the new book is about. If you're having a problem, a physical problem, let's say with too much muscle tension, it's obviously possible to pay attention to the part of your body or to practice a particular method that will help relax muscles. But I think a key aspect of awareness that is largely unrecognized as part of what I would consider to be the full scope of education and educational possibilities is the ability to raise the process of how you do things to a more conscious level. And I'm not talking now about the mind per se, but more about bodily action. So if I'm performing a particular movement, let's say with my arms, and I'm having shoulder pain, the shoulder pain actually gives you a bit of a window into the problem of how you're using your shoulders or how you're performing these actions. And the question that I asked and I began to see as a real possibility in human development is, can that process be raised to a conscious level? There's something that is not explained by evolution, because if you can, that evolution can explain perhaps why, evolution encompasses the subject of bodily control. But why is it that if you interfere with the body and then study how it works, why is it that you're able to raise the process by which you use your arms or perform actions to a more conscious level? Mm. That to me is a key part of the subject of awareness that's left out of the subject in general.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like what you just said is so loaded. It's so like richly loaded with potential topics to talk about. Mm. Like the function of the shoulder, the pain, the diagnostic of, you know, figuring out what's wrong, but also like raising to a conscious level. What does that even mean? Like, you know, I'd love to get into that.
Yeah.
As we go. Everyone, if you're interested in the topics that we talk about in this podcast, we offer courses online. And the next one that we're going to do, we're going to spend 8 weeks talking about sensory motor awareness, that is the process of learning about the body, learning about how it works, its structure, and also the subjective aspect of understanding what we're doing. It's going to be an 8-week course beginning February 24th, and all the links you can find in the show notes.
Well, James, one thing, I think perhaps a good starting point for looking at the bodily awareness side of things is anatomical design. You know, we are rather similar to other primates, but we're unique among primates with respect to our vertical upright design. There's no other primate that is fully upright like humans. I believe that's connected with our conscious faculties and other higher order abilities, but clearly, it bears on the question of how we become aware at a bodily level. And to become aware, you have to understand something about that design. So for instance, if I'm sitting and I'm using my arms rather unconsciously because I'm busy typing at a computer and my shoulders are hurting, that's directly related to my upright design. If I want to understand the shoulders, I've got to look at the upright design, because the way shoulders work in human beings is is dependent on the upright design. The shoulders, if they're tense, will be interfering with the upright design, and we have to address the tension in order to not interfere with the upright design. And conversely, the shoulders are dependent on the upright design, so that if we're interfering with that, we've got to restore that as well. So that now, in order to be aware of my shoulder tension, I really got to be aware of the whole upright support system, and I have to know something about how it works. And that's just an amazing topic in and of itself. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's so many topics within that too. I mean, you know, what I was just thinking about here is, you know, you're saying how we need to understand, for example, the function of the shoulder. I mean, you're offering not only understanding from sort of like a theoretical point of view, you know, where you can maybe draw a picture and explain what you're looking at, but you're actually saying that we need to understand this at a practical level, like a first person level, like the way that you'd understand how a machine works if you're going to work on the machine. Like you literally have to understand what you're touching and all that. This is understanding on a first person level, you know. I think that's a really amazing thing.
Yeah. That's, yeah, true. I'm thinking about that idea, because James, that's, raises the whole question of, you know, methods again, and whether methods help you, because methods are typically, you know, third person.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And what we're going to be talking about here on all these episodes is some combination, right? Like, you know, your theoretical work on, for example, like human upright posture. I mean, there's a lot of study of evolutionary theory, of like paleontology. That's cool. That's very cool. But we're also talking about understanding like how to actually restore the function of the shoulders, like you yourself actually restoring the function of your own shoulders. And that's scientific, but in a different way.
Yeah.
It's like an enlargement of the concept, I think.
The new book, Sensory Motor Awareness, A Kinesthetic Guide to the Body in Action, is now available. It is the required reading for the course on sensory motor awareness by the same name. But it is also a curriculum in its own right if you're learning about the body in action and want to get more knowledge about the subject. It's a kind of a take-home book you can try out on your own. You could find it in bookstores or online, and it's available both in print and ebook versions.
So, Ted, this is something that I do often. You know, I have a big question for you, and I often preface it with like, hey, Ted, you know. But you've talked about, and you know, we've like entitled, at least internally, the title of this episode, you know, we've like entitled this episode An Educational Model of Awareness. And you know, you've written a book called A New Model of Man's Conscious Development.
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
that right?
No? Yeah.
And you know, this is a phrase that you use, a model of awareness, a model of development. And I think it's really interesting. And what you have, you know, like what we're going to be discussing over the podcast is really like facets of your view of what awareness is. You have a model of awareness.
Yeah.
And it turns out that your view of awareness, your model of awareness, whatever it might particularly look like, is an educational model, which is also a claim about awareness itself, I think.
Yeah.
Like, it isn't just a claim about your teaching. It isn't just like your claim about wanting to be an educator. Mm. It's that awareness itself is a thing that is educated. Like it is like a learning thing, is a thing that takes leaps in consciousness or something like that. I was just hoping that you can talk about like your model of awareness and the fact that you say that it's educational, what does that say about your model of awareness? You know, what does that say about awareness for you? Because I think that your view on this is like pretty unique. It's unique, I think.
Yeah. I think one thing that I've always, I think part of my answer to your question comes from my own interest in the human being. I just think the human being is this remarkable instrument. I mean, if you think about it, the human being is to date the most complex, highly ordered structure in the known universe. Right? I mean, I find that mind-boggling just to consider that. I mean, just
It's like there's all these like higher mammals, like dolphins and whales have these huge brains, and yet like we've got this as well, and we've got the complex vocalization thing as well. We could do all these, and we're upright on land, and like it's a very strange thing to think about, isn't it? Like
just to think about just as a motor system, we're just fantastically complex. And we often speak about the brain as being the most highly ordered component. Some people have spoken about the interconnections and the neural connections in the brain are so vast that they equal the number of, you know, atoms in the universe. I mean, it's that complex. But the brain doesn't exist apart from the whole moving organism. So really, in a way, that's an abstraction. And the moving organism as a whole is more, even more vast than the brain itself. And anyway, so given the fact that the human being is this incredible, what are the aspects of human development that we haven't fully understood? I mean, if you think about it, science is on a mission to make sense of the human being. Mm-hmm. We're back engineering the human being. And it's an amazing thing. I think what science has done is incredible. And I think the effort, ongoing effort today in neuroscience to try to back engineer the brain might be the biggest undertaking of so far of the things we've undertaken in biology and human biology. But I don't think that that's going to unmask our full potential. It has incredible value. It's incredibly important because we're a machine of such vast complexity that we're designed not just to do calculations, which is largely how we look at the brain, but we're designed to do things, and we're designed to do them because we're so complex that we can take in information, form pictures of it, think, reconceptualize, have sentient experience, and respond. And just looking at the brain from the outside is never going to plumb the depths and complexity of how that system works. I think education goes further than science can in that respect. That's why we have education. If science could figure all that out, there would be no need for education, but science can't, so we have education instead. So the question is, if education is about all the complexities of this sentient, moving, thinking machine, what are the parts of that we haven't understood that go toward higher consciousness? To me, that's the single most sublimated and most interesting part of the whole thing.
All right. Okay. Yeah, I can see that. Like, almost like when you say educational, you're placing a stake in the ground, or you're like reminding us that it's a, and this is a phrase I use, I guess, a lot, you know, like a first person view of awareness. I mean, of course, like awareness is something to be experienced in a, you know, on a first person level, but I guess our schooling, our scientific view is looking at things from the outside, even looking at awareness from the outside. And we study awareness by taking reports from people in their journal and their diaries, and we look at the diaries instead of the person. Or, you know, we look at awareness and see, you know, like, what if we touch this part of the brain? What does that do to the person's sensation of color or touch or whatever? You know, it's sort of an outside view of awareness, whereas you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this is an educational model of awareness. So it's almost like you stepping your foot in, we have to plumb the depths of our own experience, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, is that right?
Well, yes, because I mean, yeah, and when you mention that, I mean, think about philosophy. Philosophy currently is really, this is a big topic in philosophy, is to recognize that there's this subjective part of how that brain appears to be the brain that produces this sentient experience. Some people contest that idea, but if the brain is producing sentient experience, then we can't just, you know, get reports from people to understand it. We have to know what it means to have the experience. And we're going to talk about that, because that's the whole question of consciousness and what, you know, how is consciousness generated? What is consciousness? Can it be explained? Will philosophy ever plumb that, you know, depth? That's an amazing question. But my question is, goes even beyond it, because I don't think there is such a thing as just conscious experience, even when you recognize how amazing and subtle it is, because there's also levels of becoming more conscious that aren't explained, even if you explain just the phenomenon of consciousness. And the question is, what are those levels? Why are they possible?
Yeah.
And that whole, and now you're looking at the problem of consciousness, but you're also looking at the problem of this machinery and how it works. And I think the whole thing has to be part of the subject. Have you noticed that very, very often when people have higher experiences, they'll tell you, I have this personal experience. I could tell you about it. And I'll show you how to have it. You too can have it. But there's not much real, again, I put this as an educational problem. There's not much explanation of why we should be capable of it, what goes into that, and what can we study as a subject to make more sense of that. I don't think we have a theory about that or a proper field of study for that.
Yeah. Well, and so, you know, the title of the podcast is The Awareness Connection. Like, what's the connection then to, like, the body and bodily experience? You know, I came to you with an interest in this sort of physical awareness topic, and, you know, like being aware of everyday actions so that I could, I don't know, move better or something like this. You know, that was my goal at the time.
Yeah.
What's the connection here? You know, you have an educational model of awareness, but I don't know. It seems you know, like awareness is almost this like ineffable thing that we're going to talk about, but what does that have to do with you know, learning about the body?
Well, if awareness is not just a function of sort of the brain or part of just conscious experience, right? If it's part of the whole design, then that's why you have different areas of awareness that could be developed. So I mentioned the kinesthetic one or proprioception. You have awareness of your body. That's clearly a part of being aware. You know, you talk to a martial artist. I mean, the martial artists who study awareness at a higher level, I mean, the ones who really, you know, aren't just totally mechanical and learning just to, you know, beat up the other guy, but the ones who are studying the real art form of martial arts, like some of the Tai Chi people or Aikido or the so-called soft martial arts, they learn, many of them are learning to become aware of their surroundings and of their placement, their location in their surroundings as part of their art. And it's a beautiful thing to watch when you see someone who's, you know, as you know, someone who's practiced at that. That kind of awareness, it's not some higher state of awareness where they're trying to eradicate the self or the, you know, the ego. Maybe it goes toward that, but they're not. Their immediate problem is they've got to be aware of what's going on around them, right? They can't turn inward. They can't just say, oh, I do my meditation and I turn inward and I chant something. They've got to learn to be aware at all times. And that kind of an awareness is bodily as much as it is perceptual, because they've got to know what's around them and they've got to know where they are. They've got to know if they're going to trip over the curb if they step backwards. They've got to know, you know, they've got to have know if someone's behind them. They're developing an awareness that is as much about their, you know, embodied self as about sort of some higher state. Mm-hmm. And the whole question of bodily awareness, it goes beyond that, because they've also got to learn to be quiet in themselves. Again, you know, you're talking about something that has as much to do with proprioception as it does, you know, perception. And so bodily awareness is as much about becoming more highly aware as practicing awareness, you know? And we could say more about that, because as you know, if you practice trying to become aware of yourself in your daily activity, you're going to uncover parts of the mind that are not conscious, that need to become more conscious. But when you say that you're uncovering a part of the mind, you're not just talking about the mind. You're talking about uncovering something psychophysical that needs to become more conscious. So awareness is about bodily action every bit as much as it is about, you know, becoming quiet or becoming more insightful at a sort of more cognitive level.
All right. And that goes to what you said before about, like, you know, the human being being capable of, did you say, was it like higher stages of consciousness before? You know, consciousness is capable in human beings of like rising to higher levels.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, I guess we're going to talk about in, you know, in coming episodes, like what that means, like what is a higher stage of consciousness? Is it like the martial artist you were talking about, just sort of being aware of his surroundings and himself in it? Would that qualify as like a transformation of consciousness? Because it seems like what you just said, learning how to uncover previously unconscious aspects of, say, action, you know, everyday actions, that seems to qualify as a transformation of consciousness. Something is now in the conscious field that wasn't there before.
Yeah. You know, right. Yeah, that would be my definition of it. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And I would, so if you look at it from an evolutionary point of view, what we inherit, abilities that we inherit, can be quite remarkable. Like some people inherit are just naturally musical. That's amazing. And inherited musical ability is a capacity of a very high order of complexity. But when you speak about awareness, you're talking about something even beyond that. And then you have if you go back in evolution, you know, to animals that are not as complex and as organized as humans, like animals, four-footed animals, that's of a very high order of complexity because they're sentient, but they're not capable of what humans are capable. If you go even further back, you have plants or cells and then you have completely insentient. So I would my model is sort of looking at those stages. Insentient life, which is already of a very high order of complexity beyond matter. Mm-hmm. Animal life, which is sentient, but not as high order as human. The human level, which is sentient and capable of all kinds of cognitive, very cognitive competencies of a very high order of complexity. And then beyond that would be the higher levels that require internal work to develop. And among those, I would place the bodily action raised to a more conscious level and higher states of awareness.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and then, you know, the burning question from someone who hears that and is interested in it, it's like, well, like, how do I do it? You know, like, how do I get there? Could you show me what to do? You know, it's a very enticing thing to hear about.
Yeah.
You know, higher
Yeah.
bodily, you know, just, you know, higher awareness in general, higher bodily awareness, transformation of consciousness. You know, this is the sort of discussion that really pricks people's ears up, I
Yeah.
think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to having those conversations.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just occurs to me, you know, so much of the work that I've done with you as a student has been addressing physical problems, you know, muscle this and, you know, shoulders that and all that. But your model here, your complexity model, it puts those types of problems in a very different context. So they're problems, but it's like they arise almost necessarily as a you know, because of the level of complexity of the organisms that we are. You know, physical problems are, you know, that aren't injuries and disabilities, I mean, but like just sort of normal problems of like, say, tension and voice hoarseness. It turns out that this is like, these arise because of the complexity, not just of the lives we live, but of the things that we are. And to solve those problems, you kind of have to go up into a higher stage of complexity, even, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a proposition about, okay, well, how do I get there? Can you teach me? And like, what do I need to know? That's education there.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, there's that gets to the question of why bodily action is an important part of this subject. And I think for me, it's a very practical problem, because to be aware, you have to be you if you want to be aware. For me, it wasn't I couldn't understand from meditative disciplines alone how to be aware of myself in activities that I was doing harmfully, and it mattered to me.
Yeah.
And
Like what? Singing? Like
yeah, or just sitting, working at a desk. I mean,
sitting, working at it. Yeah.
there was,
Quotidian, everyday
yeah.
actions, you know?
And to me, that's a big part of being mindful or more aware, more consciously aware in your daily activity was a big part of awareness, but I didn't feel I could solve it through meditation alone. And even the martial arts that I mentioned, I didn't think I was going to learn it from there, because there's an element of in some martial arts where you're going to where you learn to pay attention, it didn't include the knowledge of the body that I felt was essential to knowing how to pay attention properly in daily activities. And
Well, yeah, that's a really interesting thing to say, because like, what do you mean? You know, I can pay attention to myself while I'm writing. What do you mean to say that I'm still harming myself? Like, you know, like how are you still harming yourself sitting in a chair? I thought,
right.
you know, sitting is just sort of harmful. And
Yeah.
you're saying being aware of oneself isn't necessarily a solution to the sorts of problems that you might encounter, like say sitting or writing or singing or something like this. So
Yeah.
what kind of awareness then?
Yeah,
What
well,
do we need to know, you
if
know?
yeah, if you practice mindfulness and then you say, "Well, I'm learning mindfulness," but you say to your mindfulness teacher, "Well, but my back is hurting." So, well, turn your attention to your back so you're mindful when you're doing something. That's not going to solve your back problem, and it's not going to raise how you. That's just making your body the object of your awareness. But making your
Yeah.
body the object of your awareness, which is an element of perhaps becoming slightly more aware, isn't going to change the fundamentally unconscious level of action that needs to be uncovered.
Yeah,
As you
yeah.
know, and that's a really important issue. At the other extreme, people who want to learn that, they say, "Well, yeah, but I do want to understand my back trouble, but I don't really believe it's something to do with being mindful, because we don't believe that if you have a back,
yeah,
most people will not believe if they have a back problem that it really fundamentally has to do with their own unconscious activity, but it does. It just takes a more advanced level of understanding to get to the point of seeing that.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. People want to, you know, take a pill. People want to get a massage, some body work, and that's the level of care, treatment that they want to give. You know, a treatment. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's much more to it than that. It's hard to convince people of that because it's sort of a, we tend to split the body and mind so badly that we don't believe. So this is why mind-body unity is. This subject of awareness is as much about mind-body unity as it is about awareness.
Yeah.
Two things are totally interconnected. And in fact, a lot of what I've written about awareness is really, I approach it through the problem of mind-body unity, because when you see that bodily action is connected with the mind and how deeply, and you see how unconsciously that works, you're uncovering the problem of becoming more aware.
Mm. Mm.
So it's sort of like a cross where you have mind body unity at one one axis, and then the other axis is awareness, and the two things have to be both taken into account to achieve the goal of becoming more aware in action.
Mm, yeah, yeah. Awareness isn't enough. It's strange to say, you know.
Yeah.
It's strange to say it, but awareness is not enough. Like, yeah, we're gonna have a lot to talk about. We're going to have a lot to talk about.
And I think James, our next talk will be on the body in action, that level of awareness where we'll talk more about becoming aware of yourself in your daily activities as a basic level of, you know, unconscious working of the mind that has to be uncovered to achieve some basic ongoing awareness,
okay.
which is such a big part of what I write about and teach, you know.
Yeah.
So that, I think that'll be our next topic. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait. Yeah.